Transportation Committee will come to order, and once again, we are on Senate time, so it is now 6 o'clock. Anyway, Senator Larson, you have Senate File 1648, and, well, Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1648 is a bill that sets certain minimum land use requirements around approach areas at our state's airports. Members, we have one of the world's busiest airports crammed into one of the smallest geographic areas among major airports. This airport is within the boundaries of the Senate district in which I represent. Many opportunities and challenges exist when you have such a large facility as a neighbor. Members, airport zoning cannot be explained in two sentences or probably even 5 minutes. So I'd like to start with some background and walk through the process of how we've gotten to this point. It's been the public policy in Minnesota for at least 50 years that it is the responsibility of the state to protect the people on the ground and in the air from the adverse consequences of an airplane crash. We don't try to predict when an accident will occur. We assume, unfortunately, with weather, human error, mechanical failures, sooner or later, it is possible that an accident can happen. So what do we do to protect against the consequences of such a catastrophic event? Minnesota public policy as it relates to airport zoning rises out of a partnership with the federal government. Land use planning and protection of airports is a joint responsibility between state and federal authorities. While we often think of the FAA as the master of all things related to airports, that isn't always the case. And for a long time in my service, while I was in the House, I believed that that might have been the case. But in fact, it is not the case. FAA jurisdiction on land use issues is limited to the area where airspace restrictions exist for takeoff and landing. All other land use controls are the responsibility of state and local government. Again, in Minnesota, we have had an airport zoning requirement, or our airport zoning requirements, in place for nearly 50 years. Those statutes and rules provide for a graduated zoning system. The most restrictive areas are the closest to the runway, and the restrictions ease as you get farther away from the end of the runway. Our state standard is that the safety zone A is essentially a trapezoid shape two-thirds the length of a runway, and safety zone B about the third a length of a runway. The rationale behind these zones is that the length of the runway has a big impact on the size of the aircraft that use it. The bigger the aircraft, the faster it goes, the more people it carries, the longer the safety zone should be. Permitted land uses are limited in safety zone A, more generous in safety zone B, and are subject to certain requirements based on the number of people per acre. Members, there are some of you on the committee that were here as the dual track process played out, but I need to go back to how we got here as it relates to the expansion of MSP Airport. By the late 1980s and the early 90s, it became clear that our existing airport could not meet the anticipated growth in air travel at the existing airport at the time. The question then became, do we expand the current airport at its current location or build a new airport where there was more land available? The legislature and Governor Perpich together created what was known as the Dual Track Study, a study that was conducted by the Metropolitan Council and the Metropolitan Airports Commission to analyze the benefits and problems of the airport staying at its current location versus moving to a new site and building a new airport. One of the options that became apparent in keeping the airport at its current location was to build a new north-south runway. The relatively new Mall of America, claiming that a runway would impair its ability to expand the mall on the land it owned to the east of the existing mall, wanted relief. Many of you might have recalled numerous news articles about the required safety zones and the fact that the land owned by the mall was in Safety Zone A and could not be developed because it was unsafe for significant numbers of people to be in that area. As a result of those concerns, members, there was a substantial effort to purchase the Met Center site and swap it for the mall land so that the mall could expand to the north. And in another committee, sometime in the next few weeks, there will be further discussion about that. The legislature again became involved because it required a change in TIF districts. These efforts began before the decision was even made to keep the airport at its current location. The debate in the dual track study was whether we could expand the airport at its current location, which has only 3,100 acres, or whether we should build a new airport south of the metro area on 14,000 acres of land. Note the disparity in the sizes of the two options. To adequately build a new airport with proper runway sizes, safety zones, related airfields that are required, and all the additional things that we desired in a new airport, the experts suggested we needed 14,000 acres of land. The difference in cost between these two options was staggering. Several billion dollars, largely because of the new infrastructure that would be required at a new airport. As a result, the result of many factors, the legislature in 1996 decided to halt the dual track process and to keep the airport in its current location and expand its capacity. No matter what land use restrictions were necessary to accommodate noise and safety in the current location, it would be significantly cheaper than building a new airport. Now, as a part of an arrangement to expand, several key arrangements or agreements were reached. One of the agreements was that the nature of the new runway, named the North-South Runway, would only have operations into the airport and out of the airport to and from the south. And so it's a south-operating airport, which is when taking off or coming in on landing in my district. Furthermore, the MAC agreed at that time that it would provide insulation to homes in the 60 to 65 DNL footprint. While there is significant discussion about what that mitigation ought to be, the noise mitigation that MAC has offered these residents falls far short of the spirit of the agreement that was made. As many of you know, a district court judge recently ruled that the MAC has violated that agreement with residents and is in the process of determining damages. Finally, members, as a part of its request for approval of the new runway from the FAA, the MAC would zone around the new runway in accordance with state aviation zoning standards. While the FAA cannot dictate the results of land use planning, it conditions that initial approval on the project on appropriate state land use planning. Members, Minnesota statutes requires a joint airport zoning board to be convened by the airport owner when there are multiple municipalities that surround an airport. In the fall of 2001, the Metropolitan Airports Commission convened the Joint Airport Zoning Board. Members of a joint zoning board recommend safety zones different from what is in statute. The Commissioner of Transportation must sign an order of approval for the new zone to become effective. Members on the board included two representatives from each of the cities surrounding the airport and two members of the MAC board. The staff for the zoning board was provided by the MAC, and the lawyer who assisted the process was a lawyer from the firm the MAC has typically employed. A frequent MAC consultant, HNTB, prepared a report addressed to the Joint Airport Zoning Board. The report concluded that the risk of an airplane fatality at MSP in those safety zones A and B in the year 2010 was nearly zero. It concluded that there was no analytical support for any zoning restrictions outside the runway protection zone. Based on these reports, MAC recommended shrinking the safety zones at the south end of 1735, which is the north-south runway, and the west side of the 422 runway, to two runways that face into Bloomington. One of the issues, members, that cities raised in this process was about the liability risks if they agreed to zoning that departed from state standards. Several cities in that process expressed reservations about voting for any aspect of the zoning until there was protection put in place, protecting them from the adverse results of taking action to reduce the safety zones. Ultimately, as a part of the agreement, the Metropolitan Airports Commission entered into agreements with those cities to indemnify them as long as they approved a safety zone that was acceptable to the Airports Commission, essentially removing any of the responsibility for creating a shorter zone. Shortly after they initially adopted these recommendations, then Commissioner Elwin Tinklenburg appeared before the State Environmental Quality Board on August 15, 2002, to object to an environmental study on development in the area south of runway 1735. Members, in your packet, I believe at the very end, is the testimony from then-Commissioner Tinklenburg. Commissioner Tinklenburg made clear that safety zone requirements were not being met and they could not do a complete environmental study without consideration of the safety issues caused by a new runway. Commissioner Tinklenburg said, and members, I quote, "What this whole matter boils down to is a struggle between development pressures and safety pressures. While sensitive to both sides of the struggle, MnDOT stands firmly on the side of safety first and contends this aspect is not being adequately addressed." The Joint Airport Zoning Board did not meet again for 7 months until March of 2003, and in June of 2003 finalized its proposed ordinance, which was then submitted to MnDOT for consideration by now the Commissioner of Transportation, Carol Molnow. The Director of Planning for the Aeronautics Group of MnDOT's Office of Aeronautics sent a memorandum dated September 26, 2003. Members, that memorandum is in your packet as well, more toward the front of your packet. Sent a memorandum dated September 26 to the Director of the Office of Aeronautics recommending that the state reject the proposed ordinance and send it back to the zoning board. The Director of the Office of Aeronautics on October 8, 2003, which I believe is the top document in your packet, sent a memo to Commissioner Molnow recommending rejection of the ordinance. In the spring of 2004, Commissioner Molnow came to a different conclusion and signed an order approving the proposed ordinance, clearing the way for a reduced safety zone. Members, as I've looked at this issue and struggled with this issue, I've asked a few questions of myself. Have there been other accidents in the areas that would have been protected but for this change in zoning? What do the experts say about the need for protective zoning beyond the runway protection zone? And what are other major airports doing with respect to these issues? Members, there have been at least 7 accidents in the United States in the last 5 years that would have had catastrophic consequences had they occurred at the end of runway 1735 at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, had they occurred there. And in your packet, there are a number of descriptions of those accidents. In July of 2002, Federal Express plane had mechanical problems, landed a half a mile short of a runway in Tallahassee, Florida. You can see that picture. On August 13, 2004, a jet landed a half mile short in Cincinnati. There was an open space on a golf course, and the plane was able to skid along the ground. On February 2, 2005, in a well-publicized accident, a plane crashed while taking off at Teterboro Airport in New Jersey. The plane went across the freeway and crashed into a building on the runway center line. Members, if that accident had happened 1 hour earlier, there may have been substantial loss of life on the ground, as that building may have been full of people. On June 13, 2005, a plane taking off from Fort Lauderdale Fort Lauderdale Airport had trouble and landed in the street about half a mile from the runway. April 3, 2006, a C-5 military jet landed half a mile short of the runway after experiencing trouble in a takeoff and turning around. June 2, 2006, a charter jet crashed half a mile short of the runway in Connecticut, killing two of the five people on board. And on January 12, 2007, a business jet crashed half a mile north of the runway after taking off from Van Nuys Airport in California, killing both pilots on board. Members, all of these accidents could have occurred in the area south of runway 1735, where we have buildings with significant concentrations of people. People may quibble about the particular kind of airplane, but MSP is host to commercial aircraft, freight jets, military aircraft, and business jets. Members, in my opinion, it is virtually impossible to say this type of accident can't happen here in Minnesota. Second, I looked at what aviation experts around the world have said about the need to zone beyond the RPZ, the runway protection zone. In your packet, there is a list of a number of reports that address this issue. Not all agreeing with each other, but a number of reports that state the need for additional protection outside the runway protection zone for runways. 15 studies, many of which are sitting right here, members, on the edge of the desk. 15 different places where there's been discussion about what is the best way for us to approach safety at the end of our runways. Given the overwhelming amount of literature, that suggests that different conclusions have been reached by others as they've looked at these issues. Now, members, I referenced a memorandum from and a study from HNTB, and I have that here as well. And that is a report, and I know that we'll hear from those folks in a little bit. They come to a different conclusion, largely a different conclusion, than many of the reports here that I have on this table. Finally, I looked at other airports that have similar numbers of operations to MSP. MSP has been one of the top 10 busiest airports in the world for a number of operations for many of the last several years. The numbers have dropped recently because of Northwest bankruptcy. But assuming that this growth returns, MSP is one of the top 10 busiest airports in the world. Here are some interesting facts. Members, MSP is one of the smallest airports in terms of its actual size. MSP is 3,100 acres, compared, for example, to Denver, that's 34,000 acres, Dallas at 18,000 acres, and Detroit at 7,700 acres. There is no city that deals with significant amounts of weather that has an airport as small as MSP in terms of a large airport. That fact should drive us to demand more safety, not less. And in your packet, members, you can see the footprints from Denver, Dallas, and Detroit in terms of the development at the end of those runways. There is no other runway among the top 10 airports that has a building with significant numbers of people located right at the border of the RPZ, the runway protection zone, on the runway center line. None of them. Among the top 10 to 15 airports own land beyond the runway protection zone at over 85% of the runway ends, or the areas in an area that has natural resources or water. Members, these facts compel me to the conclusion that the current safety requirements at 1735, the north-south runway, are unlike any other similar runway in the United States. In the face of these facts, members, the Office of Aeronautics, with funding from the FAA, hired a consultant to review the Minnesota standards to determine if they were out of date and needed to be revised. That work done by Clarion Associates resulted in the Land Compatibility Manual, which has recently been released by the Department of Aeronautics. And members, I don't think this is in your packet. This is the document that comes from MnDOT. The results of the Clarion study are worth noting. There isn't a suggestion that zoning beyond the runway protection zone is unnecessary. In fact, it continues to support that Minnesota safety zones as prescribed support the safety zones that are prescribed in our statutes and rules. It has also identified a detailed list of activities that should be prohibited in the various safety zones, and some of that information is in your packet, members. Clarion has looked at the risk analysis studies, including the HNTB report, and found flaws and points out flaws in some of the manner in which the work was done. Mr. Chair, members, some will try to label this discussion as only about a company at the end of the runway named Interstate Diesel and their desire to no longer exist at the boundary of the runway protection zone. Members, if that were the only concern here tonight, I wouldn't be sitting in this chair at this table and presenting this bill. As it relates to that building, there are 200 people that work in that building during the daytime, if you want to talk about Interstate Diesel. People that work there during the day, many of whom are constituents of mine, and I'm assuming some constituents of yours. A number of them have contacted me about their concerns for safety as they go to work there every day. Not to mention the thousands of people that board the airplanes, that fly in and out of the airport on a daily basis. It impacts them as well, if God forbid, there is an accident. My concerns are much deeper and more profound than just the interests of a single company. I believe that runway safety and airport zoning requires substantial attention by this legislature. Maybe this isn't the perfect analogy, members, but remember when the Army Corps of Engineers was ignored at all levels of government as they raised issues about the structures prior to Hurricane Katrina. Raising the issues before that catastrophic event, and government didn't listen. Members, obviously, we hope that we never have an accident at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport or any of our airports. But it seems incumbent upon us as a legislature to ask more questions when it seems obvious that there's a disagreement about what the end of a runway ought to look like and if, in fact, we are accomplishing best practices here in Minnesota. During this process, I've reached only one conclusion, and that is that this issue needs more review. The bill is introduced wouldn't be practical. I'm sure all of you have heard that, and it wouldn't be. To impose this bill has never been my intent, but other than to educate folks on what a runway protection zone would look like as it relates to our statutes and as it relates to what Clarion has given us in terms of guidelines, if we didn't look at development factors. If we looked for the safest possible footprint, that, members, is what we'd be looking at. And if you look at a lot of the airports around the country where land development isn't the issue, that's largely what that will look like. Members, with that, I would move the A1 amendment and ask us to consider an effort to move forward with this issue by having this legislature engage in what should or shouldn't be or what might or might not be the appropriate safety zone at the end of our runways. There seems to be, members, something just a little off to me, and it's our statutes. It's the legislature that created it. This isn't blaming any entity that's involved in this process. It's, in fact, on what legislative action that was taken many, many years ago about whether we should have a zoning board process that determines what a safety zone should look like and have the airport owner work with the communities surrounding it to determine that, when in fact they're the entities that benefit by the shorter zone. And it seems to me, members, that is an issue that needs to be looked at. But the A1 amendment, members, creates a task force on runway safety and airport zoning around MAC airports. It's comprised of the chairs of the transportation and the state and local government committees, in addition to six other legislative members. It also includes the director of the Department of Aeronautics, Representative Met Council, presumably from the MAC. That appointment, it has been my assumption that the representative made by the Metropolitan Council would be an aeronautics expert from the Metropolitan Airports Commission. This amendment allows us additional time to study this issue and determine if best practices are being implemented at MSP and other MAC airports. The amendment requires a report back to the legislature next year, February 15th in 2008, and appropriates $100,000, which will be used for expenses and consulting costs. Mr. Chair and members, a lot of these facts are clear. We have a difference of opinion among our state's aviation experts and aviation experts at the MAC, a difference of opinion between two different transportation commissioners, a difference of opinion by consultants across the country and around the world, some of whom suggest we are outside of common practice here at MSP as it relates to safety zones, and clearly a variety of opinions about what structure should be allowed in the area outside the runway protection zone. This language is offered, members, with the hope that we can find the appropriate public policy for safety at our state's largest airport. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I appreciate this committee's time. I know that time is short, and conference committees are going on, and I appreciate very, very much the opportunity to bring this important issue to this committee and to the legislature. And I'm sure there are other folks that would like to testify on the bill and the amendment, and I look forward to those questions.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Larson, you did make the motion to move the A1 amendment. Okay. Senator Ress?
Mr. Chair, this is the committee of origin, so I know it's it's an author's amendment, but I am going to suggest some amendments to this amendment, and I wondered what would be the proper time to do that. If we adopt it first,
I'd like to adopt the amendment first, and then we'll work on it. Is there further discussion on the A1 amendment? All in favor, Senator Dunbar?
Well,
it's an author's amendment.
Mr. Chair, yes, we probably should adopt it and then discuss it. So,
all right, on the A1 amendment, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Ress.
Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the membership of the task force and to be inclusive of the committees that have jurisdiction over aviation, state aviation policy, and also over the Metropolitan Airports Commission, which is the committee that I chair. However, Senator Larson, and I think this is inadvertent, by naming the chairs of the committees and then the three members of the Senate, you have a task force that, by virtue of the majorities in the parties in the legislature, that would be eight Democrats and two Republicans. And it seems to me that that can be cured by naming to the group, changing the numbers to four members of the Senate and four members of the House of Representatives, and then for your numbers 3, 4, and 5, and 6, the chairs and the ranking minority members, and in that way you would get you would have eight Democrats and six Republicans, I think it would amount to. Anyway, I'm working on that amendment, but I didn't think you meant to be it to be top-heavy by naming the chairs as almost ex officio members by virtue of who they, the office that they hold, to be there to exclude Republican members of the legislature automatically. You only have two from the legislature, and I don't think that that's what your intent is. And I'm working on those numbers to make them a little bit more balanced.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest. Absolutely, you're right. And I feel terrible about that oversight, given the fact that I serve on Senator Rest's state and local government oversight and policy committee. And I've just botched the name of the committee as well. So
that's right.
I plead the forgiveness of the chair. But you're absolutely right. It was an oversight related more to the naming the committee members, and I looked more at the balance based on the numbers. So I would consider that a friendly amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'll work on that. But okay. It would make it then, if actually you left it at three House members and three senators, one minority member there, but then allowed the ranking minority members of the other two, of the two with the committee chairs, I think that ends up making it 8-6, mm-hmm. and then with the two other members, then that would make a task force again of 16. And I also have a question about whether, when you're naming members of the administration and or the Met Council here, although you're indicating that you. Your wish would be that would be someone related to the Metropolitan Airports Commission, whether there ought to be directly a member of the Airports Commission or a representative from the Airports Commission on this task force. And then my question would be should those people be non-voting members or should they be voting members, and whether you really would like to have the voting members be the legislative members. Now, although some of the issues that I'm raising here actually, in terms of setting up task force, are the jurisdiction issues in the State and Local Government Committee, it seems to me that particularly the notion of whether it's a policy issue for this committee, since this is where this bill is, to make sure that it's more evenly balanced between Republicans and Democrats, and also to make a policy decision about whether the member from the Met Council and the Aeronautics Department of Aeronautics should be members, but whether it's appropriate for them to be voting members along with the legislators. And I'm not suggesting to you which one that should be, but I do think it's a legitimate question. And then following that, just as a suggestion, it seems to me that in the report that you are suggesting, I would have an amendment to your amendment that says that on line 210 to strike, and I'll have it in writing, to strike everything after jurisdiction and to insert so it would read with jurisdiction. With jurisdiction over state aviation policy and the Metropolitan Airports Commission, which would mean that the reports would go to the committees of the legislature in both bodies. It would mean it would come to the Transportation Committee and to the State and Local Governments Committee without having to name them, because heaven knows they may change the names of them. And so it's better, I think. But it's not just a transportation issue. It is something that has to do with the Metropolitan Airports Commission directly, and I think that should be included. So those are my suggestions, seeing your amendment. And I do think that the airport safety issues and airport zoning issues are really important and deserves our careful attention across the legislature in the committees that have jurisdiction over the one airport in particular that that brings an airport safety issue to the fore here, which is MSP, as well, and the MAC and its policies, as well as the jurisdiction over aviation, which is the jurisdiction of this committee, and particularly the Department of Aeronautics, located within the Department of Transportation. So those are some suggestions I'd like to make about the makeup of your task force that I think are policy issues to be decided here, and maybe some of the wordsmithing could be done in a later committee, but the policy issue of including Republicans I think is pretty important, mm-hmm. and the report going to the committees with jurisdiction over state aviation policy and the MAC would be a policy decision to be made here and not in the Committee on State and Local Government.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I agree with you, and I think it's a matter of getting the language on how to put together. I absolutely agree on the minority membership. Ought to be increased from what is in the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I do have it written on the.
Okay, Senator
Rest. The reporting language.
We'll have Ms. Berezovsky take care of this real quick, like, and in the meantime.
And then I could work if there's going to be testimony. I could work mm-hmm. on the changing the numbers on the task force itself. That we could come back to that amendment later if Senator Larson is amenable and mm-hmm. and if you are.
Well. Senator Rest, I definitely think that the 8-6 split is the preferable option. For me, it is. Because you never know. 3 years from now, I don't know, Senator Ortman might be chairing this committee, and I might be sitting at that end of the table. So.
And we would want to be treated fairly.
Senator Ortman, you had a question? Or
Chair, no, I just want to make a comment. I always like the way Senator Rest thinks. I thank you for including the minority in the task force. But I'm wondering if you wouldn't also agree that maybe there are some other members missing, which would be representatives of cities and counties, especially those cities that are affected by these airports. It would seem to me that they should be part of this task force, and it's not really complete without them. There probably should be the commissioner of the Department of Transportation or his or her designee. There are...
You've got that one in here.
This is first blush here, but I think that there are probably some more people that could help advise us, especially if you're going to talk about zoning. Our experts are not here in the Senate necessarily. They are in the cities and on the planning and zoning commissions, and so some thought should be given to those members as well.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I raised that issue briefly with Senator Larson, and his rejoinder was that this was we're talking about safety issues here, and that it was more appropriate for the representative from the Met Council, which he would assume would be the MAC person, an engineer of somebody, and Department of Aeronautics as the where this zoning issues take place would be the more appropriate representatives rather than representatives from cities. And of course the other issue I was thinking about was what if the Senate and the House appointed members from greater Minnesota, and do we want this to be a more expanded study of airport safety all over the state, or whether it really is a concentration on MSP, but I don't have a recommendation on that. But it seems to me that if the members were appointed from the metropolitan area in particular, that they would be working in very close concert with the cities that they represent. So that kind of it's arguable, obviously.
Senator Orman?
Mr. Chair, that might be an agreement. I'm hopeful that it is. I think that safety is the primary. It's the first thing. It's what you know, Senator Larson is driven by is the issue of safety, but it shouldn't be the end of the discussion when it comes to zoning, and that's why I think that we should be including some of the local government in zoning, because there is more than safety to consider here.
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I want to thank Senator Larson. I think this is a genius of a compromise, and, you know, having sat through this issue multiple times, I think we do need to look at it more in depth, and I'm not sure I agree with bringing the cities or counties into it, because I think that's what got us into a little trouble here, was the people that were at the table before had everything to gain and nothing to lose. They were looking more at the economic development than the safety issue. So I'm open to that thought process, but I want to focus on the safety and whether what we're doing is of safety concern and not just a zoning concern. As some might have suggested, yes, Republicans might be a little concerned about safety and aviation issues too, so we're excited. But as we went on that dual-track process and decided to keep with MSP such a high-density amount of operations within a close proximity in terms of acreage, we have to be more cognizant of safety there. As we look at the rest of the MAC airports, the changes in the types of aircraft that are coming out, there's a lot of changes in the last couple of years, and so safety becomes a major factor in understanding how that is all interoperational with the airports, and not only runways and safety zones, but potential overruns. So there's a lot of things to look at that I don't think, when some of these decisions were made, I don't think we looked at way out in the future and said, are there different types of aircraft coming? What's going to happen here? And I think since this is a short-term committee dealing specifically as it's identified today, the MAC system, you could see that whatever we would come up with could be put in place in outstate and hopefully would, you know, transfer to our thought process around the state for other airports. But I think it is incumbent on us to work with our busiest airport to begin with and our busiest system with the relievers. But the safety issue was, I mean, over and over and over again, I've harped about that. Are we looking too much at economic development and not enough at a safe, stable environment at the end of those runways?
Senator Saltzman.
On the economic development issue, Mr. Chair, is there any legislation before us this year related to investments in the Mall of America area? Senator Larson, because I guess I will say this, that if we want to go down this road at the 11th hour, I would be strongly against any investments in any bills that would develop more area in this zone that you believe is, you know, unsafe. That if we're going to have this task force that may come back with recommendations which may change the area that needs to be addressed, why would we be investing any more money in this area? I mean, I'm looking at this line, and I can't remember when I've been to the Mall of America class because I've been here, but there's a lot of building in this blue area that I just think that I'm a little concerned when I look at how close this is to the mall. You've raised a number of safety issues, but I am concerned that if it's this unsafe, we need to be very careful about what kind of investments we make in this area this session, if we're also going to be having a task force potentially changing some development there. So I just raise that as a concern. I also have an airport in my community in Lake Elmo, and I've talked to a number of different people. I've talked to people from the Pilots Union. I've talked to people from a number of different areas, and I'm not seeing them come forward with these same concerns. So that's why I would also like to know, like, who is behind this. Would be helpful to know, and I'm sure we'll hear from some other people, but who's bringing this forward? Is this really, are there a number of different stakeholders who raise this issue?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Saltzman, there's a couple issues to hit there. Number one, I'm bringing this forward. And I'm the chief author of this bill, and as I said earlier, I'm not doing it for anybody. I'm doing it because a couple of years ago, the city council from the city that I represent contacted me and asked me to contact the Commissioner of Transportation to help lobby to get the order signed so that the safety zone could be reduced. And I started asking more and more questions about that question, about that request. My initial thought was, yeah, you know, we all want to help our cities. And my city is not a bad city. They're a very good city. They're an excellent city council. They're an excellent city administration. They run Bloomington very, very well. But I didn't feel comfortable, after I reviewed more of the data, that that was the right call. And so I've been asking questions about this for a long time. The fact that, in addition to that, if you look on that zone that I think you're looking at in front of you, and you see where the blue area comes out, and then there's a line there, the fact that there are companies at the end of that runway zone that at least in one case have significant amounts of people in there during the day, and the fact that they're concerned is fine. It's frankly a separate issue. The issue that I had is I was not comfortable, after seeing the information from the Department of Aeronautics, going forward with that strategy, that a shorter zone accomplished what we needed. You know, we, in 1996, we decided to shoehorn an airport into a heavily populated area, further shoehorn in another runway. And some of the trade-offs were going to be, it was going to be a better neighbor. The airport itself was going to be a better neighbor. Well, that hasn't entirely played out. And so I intend to address those issues. We aren't always on the same page as our cities. As it relates to the Mall of America, you'll look, actually the Mall of America is further to the west, and that's the square property there outside of any of the runway zones. But Senator Saltzman, if you can convince members of the Senate that you don't want further investment in the Mall of America, the Mall of America provision that's in the Senate bill, all of the provisions allow for the city to tax the area either at the mall or tax city residents. And I have not, especially as it relates to the tax increment financing portion of it, have not supported. And so, you won't find me guarding that with a great deal of zeal. And I've been trying to be reasonable because I know a lot of people have a desire to see that development occur. I might be willing to take the chance to let the market develop it itself without the public investment. So that really doesn't play into this as far as I'm concerned. But what I am concerned about is safety. I am concerned about that because that's my district. Those planes fly over my district every day, and it's a major concern. And, you know, there's obviously a difference of opinion here. You're going to hear from testifiers, I'm sure, that will say there's no problem at all. There's no chance of a crash. You know, I don't know how you can conclude that. Those things happen. I don't want them to happen. None of us want those things to happen. But I also don't want to be the legislator that looked the other way when the experts over at the Department of Aeronautics were saying this isn't right. This isn't safe. And you look the other way. 30 years from now, if there's a catastrophe, I'm going to know that when I was at the state Senate, I did everything I needed to do to make sure my community was safe and that we have a safe facility. That's the trade-off here, members. We shoehorned this in, and we said it's going to be a lot cheaper. Don't worry about it. It's going to be a lot cheaper. But we're going to do some additional insulation. Well, guess what? By and large, that's gone. Okay, safety has to be a major concern here when we're doing that. We would have done a new airport with 14,000 acres, and we're putting it into 3,100 acres. And I'm not here to be critical of the Metropolitan Airports Commission as it relates to, tell people that from an operation standpoint, it's one of the very well-run airports in the world. And I think a lot of people here would agree with that. I just happen to disagree with this policy. And if that means that there is some degree less tax base in my community, it'd be easy for me to say, hey, let's just develop it up. Why should we worry about safety? But if you look at that runway, and some of those pictures of planes that went down in other places, I'm not going to be responsible for that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be. Because you know what? If one of those airplanes crashes into a building and a lot of people die, whose responsibility is it going to be? It's going to be ours. Because this is a state decision. It's a state decision. And that's why I'm here, and that's why I'm pushing this bill. If others want to support it or oppose it, I invite them forward. But members, this is a serious issue, and it needs to be taken very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Senator Saltzman, we do have the Metropolitan Airports Commission has an impeccable safety record, one of the best any place in the world, and Senator Larson would agree with that. I believe what Senator Larson is asking for here is let's just catch our breath for a second and have somebody else take a look at this one more time. Look it over and make sure that we're doing the right thing for everybody involved, not only at the end of the runway that has the interstate company in it, but on the other ends of the other runways as well. And I really think that that's something that we should do because nobody can tell us with certainty on most anything in life, especially about airplanes, because they're built by human beings. And, you know, Northwest had one of their what do they call their spinoff business these days, Senator Larson? Their
Pinnacle.
Okay, one of those folks ran off the end of the runway just 2 weeks ago over in Detroit, I believe. But so things happen. It was because of a brake failure, they believe. So these things happen. Senator Larson's just simply asking that we look at this another time because there is so much. And we've been through this last year and the year before, and it just there's always a little bit of consternation around the airport. Not only for noise issues, but for safety issues. And, you know, for the most part, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, they're pretty easy to beat up on. And we've taken, you know, they've taken a lot of blows from the legislature. But, you know, they do a really good job. I think in this instance here that there were some decisions that were made that, you know, in hindsight's really good. There were some decisions made that that cause for pause. If you saw how the safety zones were set up on other airports and then did an overlay on our airport as far as safety zones, you'd see something that was substantially different. And I just think that we need to take another look at this. And who knows if the report that comes out of this group that meets is going to be any different than what we have going on right now.
So, to just respond, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. and Senator Larson, I am not being critical of you about this at all, but it's just to, I think this is a substantial task force. Personally, I would have preferred to see Senator Rest's subcommittee hear this to have some more input and discussion from them before it comes to us. I think trying to make this decision tonight, I just feel uncomfortable with because I think it raises some other issues, and I'm not trying to trade off investments in your community versus this. It just feels that if we're going to have this kind of study done, I think we need to look at also what we're doing around this area because it could impact mm-hmm. some of that development. Because I think when you look at also some of these other runways and the homes or the businesses that are there, not to say that we should ever trade off safety just for that, but I know that there's issues in my community right now where I'm trying to say, can we have a thoughtful, balanced, responsible discussion about it? And this feels, it feels rushed to me tonight, and I'm just being honest, that I feel very uncomfortable putting together a task force that I think I would rather have, I'd like to see perhaps some other people on it who are more involved with who know a little bit more about safety than perhaps a legislator. So I'm just kind of voicing some of my questions out loud because I'm feeling like we may be making this decision tonight, and I don't know that the people who need to be here to testify are here, and perhaps they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Saltzman, this is what we do. That's what we do as legislators. We're not experts, but we take testimony from the people who are. And that's what we're asking to do here. It's no different than having this hearing that we're having tonight. None of us here, except for maybe Senator Jungbauer, has a lot of expertise in the area of aviation. So we're asking that people in the legislature, people who are responsible to the voters, people who have election certificates, go out and take the testimony and bring back some recommendations. I mean, we do this all the time. And I don't think that this is rushed at all. As a matter of fact, I think Senator Larson has went a long way in moderating his position, because the original bill, I'm looking around the room here, and I don't see a whole lot of people that were jumping for joy about his original bill. But I think that this is the appropriate way to go. With that, we'll have Senator Dibble and Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I first have some basic questions, and I think I know the answers, but I just want to be sure. Senator Larson, I'm looking at these series of pages, and I just want to understand kind of what exists today on the ground in terms of the safety zones, the A and the B, as it relates to the subsequent pages that show in real life. Is what we're looking at in terms of the A and the B zones the 2003 ordinance, was that adopted, and is that sort of reflected in these maps? So the A zone is 2,500 feet from the end of the runway, and then the full safety zone extends out 7,000 feet, so the B would be 4,500. Is that what we live with now?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble. If you're looking at the, and this actually is a document from the Department of, I believe I get this from the Department of Aeronautics, and I don't know if some MnDOT, if Department of Aeronautics folks are here, but maybe they can. I see Mr. Rod is in the audience. I don't know if he'd be willing to help us out here or not.
Senator Larson, that's fine. If Mr. Rod wants to come in, we were hoping to be done in an hour, and we've already blown past that. My intention was 30 minutes for, 30 against voting. And I would hope that the opponents of your original legislation would be a little happier that this is now a task force. Maybe they won't use their entire 30 minutes. Mr. Rott.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. In answer to the question, the safety zone A that was adopted by the Joint Zoning Board, I believe, is 2,500 feet long. Then out beyond that, the B zone would be the rest of that. The model that we provide would be A zone is two-thirds of the 7,000 feet, and the B zone would be the rest of the 7,000 feet.
And so that would be consistent with, you know, some of the earlier models I see to the left here. What is this last one with this little stack in the middle? Where does that come from? What is that about?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, what we were looking at is trying to maintain as safe as operation as possible, and was there some areas that we could possibly remove from the A zone, put it in a B zone, allow some certain things to happen in those areas while protecting the area primarily where the airliners would be coming down the center line as much as possible. And that's what we were looking at there.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, we see strange configurations like this, or you see an A zone significantly diminished to 2,500 feet. You know, I just have to say that to my colleagues, we're going to be dealing with issues like this time and time again forever, because we've got this 3,100-acre landlocked site completely surrounded, if you look at this map, by densely built urban environment as contrasted with, you know, what other major metropolitan areas have done, which we aspire to be a major metropolitan area, Denver and others, where, you know, they went out and built these, you know, tens of thousand acre new airport sites with multiple parallel runways so they can run all kinds of operations concurrently, taking off, landing, you name it. You know, granted, there's been a downturn in the number of flights landing and taking off from MSP, but, you know, we will at some point reach a maximum, and then I think technology will let us shoehorn even more in. So in 1996, when the legislature, in its wisdom, I think, you know, only partially because of the money that was being talked about, the, you know, $4 billion, but I think more because the major operator at the site, Northwest Airlines, really wanted to have this site stay where it was because it's small and its, you know, ability to totally dominate this particular facility was enhanced by them staying here versus a Denver or some other place where you introduce more competition. We're gonna be dealing with these sorts of issues that are unique to such a major airport in such a densely built environment. And remember, in 1996, the legislature preempted and completely prohibited the state or the MAC or anyone from ever imagining or doing anything, taking any steps to envision and build an airport somewhere else by prohibiting any sort of land assembly. And so now all that land is pretty much gone. It's, you know, it's been acquired. It's far too expensive. It's never ever going to happen. So we'll always be in this literal box where we are. Mm-hmm. You know, I commend Senator Larson for bringing this legislation forward. You know, I'm of two minds because if you extend those A zones, which creates pretty significant land use impacts, where actually, just as an aside, I think we should have our cities represented in some fashion, because that will take a big bite out of not just a particular facility, but a lot of houses that, you know, that would gut some neighborhoods in Minneapolis if they were to impact. So, but that's the dilemma I'm in. Here I am now defending, you know, something like this, which is ridiculous. It's not safe, you know, and it comes about because we have such a tight airport, so that a neighborhood that I represent, well, I don't actually represent, but as a Minneapolis legislator, I represent on this committee, from having its life taken away from it. Because when you take away, you know, acres and acres of housing, you rob, and these are some of the most vital, thriving, middle-class neighborhoods, despite the noise impact they have. One other commentary, just, you know, as long as I'm harping on this stupid 1996 decision that was made by the legislature, we've almost spent as much money as we would have spent on a new airport now. You know, we're at $3 billion and counting at this site, and I think we would have spent about $4 billion on a new airport. And so, you know, someone can easily question the wisdom. And that's, you know, that's, you know, paid for by the users and economics that are generated at the site. So it wouldn't have been taxpayer money written from the general fund treasury. So, and we already have more gates than we ever envisioned in that plan at that time, currently at the airport. So you know, this is our life forever. This is, you know, we're going to be trotting these issues out, trying to deal with an ill-fitting airport forever.
Well, Senator Dibble, as a person who, before he was elected, fought against having the airport plopped down next to the city that I eventually represented, and a person who was on that conference committee and a co-author of that bill, I think we made a pretty good decision. And
I have a dramatically different perspective, Mr. Chair.
Yes, we do.
Mr. Chairman.
But, and that's why we have discussions like this. I believe that Senator Larson's on the right track here. We all want to make sure that the airport that we have now, and it's going to be here in the future, and that's the one we're going to have, make sure that it's the best it possibly can be and the safest. And that's, I think we're on the right track here.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Skoy was first, unless you had. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Larson, just so I'm clear, when I look at the aerial photo with the two yellow buildings and the blue line, is the blue line 2,500 feet from the end of the runway?
This one.
If I could there, be
the aerial photo behind.
Could be corrected, but Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, yes.
So that's 2,500 feet. The MSP existing standard, I'm assuming that's the old standard, was 4,667 feet, almost twice as much. Minnesota's statutory standard is 5,333 feet, over twice as far. I think it's completely appropriate that we study this. I'm going to vote for your bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ress.
Mr. Chairman, I have given Ms. Berezovsky my proposed amendment in writing, and I'd like to offer it at this time.
Okay. Ms. Berezovsky, can you walk us through that amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, it has three parts to it. On referencing the A1 amendment, on 1.27, after the word Senate, delete all language and delete 1.28 and 1.29 and insert, quote, two appointed by the majority leader and one appointed by the minority leader.
Okay.
Okay. Then on there are four different lines where the same change will be made. 1.32, 1.33, 1.34, and 2.1, after chair, insert, quote, and the ranking minority member.
Okay.
And 2.11, delete transportation and insert state aviation policy and the Metropolitan Airports Commission.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ress.
Mr. Chairman, that reflects the addition of what for this legislature would be Republican members of the legislature, and I also, in our state and local government guidelines, we have suggested that short-term task force, so that we don't have to call a committee, a meeting of the committee, subcommittee on committees, that short-term task force be appointed by the majority leader and the minority leader, reflecting that those two things. If it was a long-term permanent commission, we would go to the legislative, to the subcommittee on committees. But for short-term, we reflected exactly the way it is for the House. So that's why we would be striking the language about the subcommittee on committees. And then it includes the ranking minority members, which I think is appropriate for a discussion this broad.
Discussion on the amendment? Senator Larson?
Consider it a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Thank you, Senator Ress.
On the Ress motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Larson, I think you've come a long way in this compromise. I think it's fabulous, and I have great respect for your passion and your sense of duty in responding to this issue. I think one of the things that has driven this issue is the fact that it has seemed that the decisions have been made heavy-handed. Seemed. It's a perception. I'm not sure whether it's true or not, but I've seen the perception. The perception is that the Metropolitan Airport Commission makes its decision and drives MnDOT's decision, and then that goes back to Northwest Airlines, that it's all an accommodation for Northwest Airlines. And it's a perception, and at some point, perception becomes the problem itself, whether it's true or not. And I can see that there's been frustration as long as I've been here at the legislature, which was not as long back as 1996. Thank you very much. But as long as I've been here, there's been this problem where this Senate Transportation Committee tries to respond to the fact that it seems like decisions are being made in a heavy-handed fashion. And so that's why I have great respect for what you're trying to do here. The task force makes sense. But if you're going to have a task force, I strongly encourage you to do it for the purpose of building the buy-in. that it also cannot suffer from the same perceptions of being heavy-handed. And if the only people on the task force are legislators, it may suffer from that same perception. And so I don't know how else to encourage you but to say, add in the same people that will want to be noticed, that will want to be a part, that have a concern about it, and I think maybe Senator Saltzman was onto it as well, that there are people that the task force will make its recommendations, and there will be people that will respond. And rather than having this for that and the constant dialogue forever and ever, like Senator Dibble has said, just include some people in this task force so we have the whole buy-in, everybody gets notice, everybody gets an opportunity to participate, and we get some solutions that mean something throughout the community, not just to the Senate or to certain groups, but to everybody. And so I've asked Ms. Berezovsky to prepare an amendment for me as well, and it will be to include a representative designated by the cities of Richfield, Bloomington, and Minneapolis, and one each from Hennepin County, Dakota County, Ramsey County, and one from MnDOT. Now, I'm not saying that that's the end-all for this recommendation. I ask you to consider that and consider maybe that's not the right apportionment. I don't know. But I know you've got to try to build, my recommendation, you've got to try to build the community support for the outcome of the task force by building it into the representation on the task force.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Ortman, you know, I've also struggled with these inclusions of members on the legislative study group task force. I think that the legislators have the power to convene the task force. These other groups, affected stakeholders, they will come. They will let the legislators know what their issues are. They can testify to the issues. But I have come around to the conclusion that you need to keep these a little smaller in the decision-making body. And I think that having legislators and department personnel is probably going to be the most effective in this case.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scoia, on that point, the Senate can pass a bill. We can take all that testimony and we can pass a bill. The point here was to have a task force. And if we're going to have a task force instead of just a legislative committee making a decision and a bill being passed, then we should include more people. If you want to just have the legislature use its judgment, then okay, let's have a bill. But I have all the hearings related. But I think that's where we had this problem. We have all these people who say, wait a minute, we want to have participation in the process. And I think that if we do that, maybe we take this whole thing to the next level and we aren't just replacing our judgment for theirs or theirs for ours, and we try to put everybody together in a room and say, let's see how we can work this for the future, bigger term, longer term.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I oppose Senator Ortman's amendment, and I normally do think that it's important to have all stakeholders present, but I go back to the intent of the proposed legislation, and it's with regard to safety. And I think that that's where our eye ought to be. And I think that the stakeholders that Senator Ortman has talked about wear dual hats, because there's the development related issues. And I think that people, you know, have the concern about the development related issues. But in this particular case, we are responsible for the safety of human lives. And I think that because that lies with the legislators, that we ought to be very, very cognizant of that and take that duty very seriously. So I don't support that amendment.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, and actually, Senator Ortman, I'm kind of buying into some of the things you're saying, but I didn't hear you say Anoka County, as we have one of the busiest reliever airports in Anoka County. And I can't think of the answer, but I kind of agree with what's going on here, that would be key for the testimony. But I'm wondering if an organization like the Reliever Airport Council RAC or something else that's more geared into representing the airports and some of their issues. So I can't think of something right now, but I don't think I like your amendment the way it is, but I'm understanding where you're going, and I'm not sure how to think through it.
All right, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support Senator Ortman's amendment. Of course, we're talking about safety primarily, but this airport is located in a very densely built environment, so we have to balance issues. That's, you know, that's what I find frustrating about the position I'm now in as a Minneapolis legislator. We have a densely built environment now that this airport sits in. It has 400 and some thousand operations. It'll max out at 700 and some thousand, you know, at some point in the not too distant future. And we have neighborhoods that are packed up tight against the boundaries of the airport, and that these safety zones overlay. And there are now a number of interests that need to be balanced, and safety zones deal specifically and explicitly with land use, which is the purview and the domain of local jurisdictions, of local government, of cities. And we need to be able to be at the table to plan for. I mean, if we wipe out a huge neighborhood in South Minneapolis, Minneapolis needs to be there at the table to be a part of that decision and plan for that.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And first of all, Senator Larson, I just wanted to thank you for bringing this bill forward and this compromise, the amendment forward. I feel pretty strongly that legislators have a responsibility to listen to the concerns of the public and not just listen to concerns of those who are paid to have certain positions. So I know you've taken a lot of flack for introducing this bill, but I also understand that sometimes you need to introduce legislation that captures people's attention and helps move the discussion along. So first, I'd like to just commend you for that. But then I was thinking and wondering, Senator Larson, if instead of what has been proposed for including a list of different representatives from various cities, if to address some of Senator Ortman's concerns and others that I've heard, maybe just add one member representing the League of Cities might be a compromise to address some of the concerns that were expressed, and it also could more broadly a representative from the League of Cities, I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but could also be represent cities' concerns, since we're talking not just about MSP but also other airports operated by the MAC.
Okay, we have the Ortman motion to amend. I'll have Ms. Spierzofsky read that motion, and then we'll vote on it. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, are we going to take testimony? Because if we are, I would prefer to just wait on the amendment until we've heard some of the testimony, if we are going to.
Mr. Chair, can I just say one thing, and then I'll
withdraw your motion, and we'll do that, Senator Ortman.
And, Mr. Chair, I want to make it really clear that my goal is not to exclude the communities that surround this facility. That's largely the district that I represent, as Senator Dibble, and I have a portion of Southwest Minneapolis, the entire city of Richfield, and East and Central Bloomington. So I very much want the input there. But I also know when it kind of comes down at the final end here, we have, as a legislature, put this process in place. So we're the ones that ultimately have to take another relook at this. I'm not at all blaming in any way the folks in any of the cities that surrounded that were part of the Joint Zoning Board. It's just what we set out in law for them to consider. I just think that maybe we didn't have the right process that goes back many decades. So if we can find a way to be inclusive, I think we can do it perhaps without an amendment. But if that makes people more comfortable, maybe we can, after the testimony, we can get there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Larson. Let's take some testimony from whoever wants to testify on this amendment. Ms. Smith.
Good evening. My name is Mary Hill Smith. A number of you know me as a Metropolitan Council representative. However, I'm not here representing the Metropolitan Council. I was asked to be the independent chair of the Joint Airport Zoning Board as required by Minnesota law. The Joint Airport Zoning Board is, in Minnesota, an entity that is statutorily required. Whenever an airport needs to rezone adjoining areas...
Ms. Smith, can we take the testimony in regards to the amendment? We're going to finish this bill in 15 minutes.
Oh, I thought
so just, just testimony about the amendment. Okay, thank you. Is there anybody that wants to talk about the amendment? Mr. Hamill, does the Airports Commission have... If Mr. Hamill, if you could kind of give us the Metropolitan Airport's take on the amendment. And we're talking about this task force now.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jeff Hamill. I'm the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Airports Commission. I think I've met or dealt with most members of the committee, and I've been here for many years. By way of background, let me simply say that I've been with the Airports Commission.
Pull the mic closer to you.
A little closer. I have worked for the Metropolitan Airports Commission for approaching 32 years. I've been its executive director since 1985. That you all know well. What you don't know about me is that I've also been flying airplanes for nearly 40 years. I'm a retired Air Force colonel. I have flown turbine-powered, four-engine, jet transport-powered airplanes for almost 27 years of my life. I was the chief pilot of the 96th Airlift Squadron, Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, flying the C-130 Squadron, evaluator, instructor, pilot. I'm in a unique position because not only am I the administrator of this airport and responsible for its operation, but I've also dedicated my life to sitting in the cockpit, flying into airports not only around the state of Minnesota, around the country, but around the world, with over 8,000 hours of flying experience in tactical and high-risk environments. I have to tell you that I am bothered by the discussion, Mr. Chairman, that would suggest that I would sit before you today and not comment on the safe operation of the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport or any airport that's owned and operated by the MAC. I will tell you that I think our airport is a very safe facility, and I think our track record shows it to be probably one of, if not the safest, metropolitan airport, one of the safest in the United States or around the world.
Mr. Hamill, I think that there was plenty of members here that expressed that view. We all feel that we've got a very well-run and very safe airport.
Let me just because I've been sitting for over an hour, Mr. Chairman, just let me just
I know.
Give you
go,
a few
go
minutes,
right
please.
Ahead. Go
if,
right ahead.
If you just give me the thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport is not the largest airport in the nation, but it's not the smallest, nor is it one of the smallest. It is, quite frankly, a typical older airport location close into a metropolitan community. Senator Dibble is right. People live close to the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. The decisions were made in a public process, and we are where we are today. And quibbling over what happened throughout the dual-track airport planning process is not necessarily constructive to this discussion. But I have to tell you that I am concerned about safety every single day when I go home from work and I'm sitting at home and I get up in the morning and come to work. There's one thing that I never stop thinking about, and that's the safe operation of this airport. I will also tell you that we spent from 1989 when you passed the Airport Planning Act and directed us to begin the dual airport, the dual track planning process. We have worked on environmental impacts, construction design, and safety criteria as established by the Federal Aviation Administration on how to build this airport properly, how to construct runway environments. And if we did not believe that we could build an additional runway and operate a safe operation out of this location, I will tell you I personally would never have suggested or gone along. I would have resigned my position at the MAC if I believed that this was an unsafe decision or an inappropriate decision to operate a major metropolitan airport. But the reality is that there are a lot of airports around this country, around the world, that have conditions that are significantly different than ours. And I believe our airport is one of the safest operating airports in the nation, given the fact that we are one of the few airports in the northern tier of the United States, dealing with all sorts of weather conditions year-round. Minneapolis is the alternate for airports heading north from the south when it comes time to follow in poor weather conditions such as snow. We are the diversion airport for Chicago until they fill us up, which is actually a pretty quick process. So we are not the largest airport. We're not the smallest. We are not Denver. Denver was built 10 years ago. They just celebrated their anniversary. They got 30,000-plus acres of land. And you know something? If we do that, I would have been in here 10 years ago telling you we need 30,000, 40,000 acres of protected territory as well. But the reality is we have what we have, and we are where we are. And this airport is operated in a very safe manner with an outstanding reputation. And I believe that as administrator of this facility, we have done a very good job of running a very safe and sound operation. Accidents. I study aircraft accidents, and I have studied them since 1968. I have a file cabinet of accidents. I have the Teterboro crash in my file cabinet. And I'll simply respond this way. If the committee secretary would take a look at NTSB file identification number DCA05MA031, you will find out about the Teterboro accident. And I just urge you to read those statistics and then take the testimony, because I believe that Senator Larson was seriously misrepresented here. The information he had is simply not this crash. And I don't believe there were two crashes on February 2nd, 2005 at 7:15 in the morning. There's the report, and here's the study. There's a huge file on this accident. That's only one example. I have not looked at the others. The point being, there is so much confusion, there's so much complexity with this airport issues, that I just think that pointing to accident histories on an aircraft that never would have left airport property, barely gotten over the overrun at the airport at the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport, being represented as an airport accident that would have caused serious problems in Minneapolis, is just simply outrageous. Outrageous. We're talking about safety. We've alluded to noise. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to suggest we're also talking about money, a lot of money. Sitting behind me are two representatives of Interstate Diesel. They've been sitting in meetings with me for the last several years. And the reason they're sitting there is because they want this on behalf of their client. That is bad public policy. Interstate Diesel shouldn't drive this decision or even participate in it other than to provide you with their commentary. If it is unsafe for Interstate Diesel to be where it is, then Senator Diddle is right. It's unsafe for anybody to be sitting anywhere within these boundaries on any end of any runway of any airport in the state of Minnesota. And we've got a lot of airports with a lot of issues, and we've got some responsible zoning that must take place that will cost not millions, not tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, because you're being led to believe that MSP is unsafe, or that airports aren't being properly managed, or that Northwest Airlines or MAC have contrived to do something that's inappropriate. That is all flat wrong. MnDOT's own aeronautical regulations permit an accommodation for existing facilities. And Mr. Rott can come up and discuss this because he has a much stronger knowledge firsthand than I do. But there are socioeconomic factors that come into whether an area should be cleared to accommodate airport expansion. We went through a public process with the Joint Airport Zoning Boards, where citizens from all the communities that you want to put on this committee sat down for not months, years, working on this overall policy. And they, in concert with the Metropolitan Airports Commission and MnDOT, made a determination that this runway was safe. If you should decide this runway is not safe, then it's time for us to bite the bullet, get on with it, call a spade, determine that not only Interstate Diesel, but all the homes in South Minneapolis underneath these trapezoidal figures, and Duluth, and Rochester, and who knows where else in the state of Minnesota, ought to simply be acquired and cleared, if that's the intent. This is bad public policy being brought forward for the wrong reasons. There is litigation history on this issue. There have been numerous decisions by judges and by courts and appeals that have been supported that point to the fact that this is not inappropriate public policy issue, that the law doesn't substantiate these claims. Let me wrap up because you can tell that I feel strongly about this, Mr. Chairman. Let me suggest to you that what you're proposing is to try to find and put together a study group of people who genuinely and truthfully care about these issues as passionately as I do. And I support that concept. I think that, in fact, that task force concept is a very, very good and sound idea. I respect Senator Larson for his efforts because I believe he's genuine. I don't know how he came to his decision, but I've known Senator Larson for a long time. And he's always come to us on issues of noise or airport operations or whatever the case may be, safety. But he's always been genuine in my mind. And I think this task force is a reasonable alternative. What I'm worried about is the composition. Let's get the appropriate skill, the appropriate knowledge, the appropriate policy decision makers in the room and really talk about this issue. And as MnDOT's regulation says, evaluate the socioeconomic impacts of an existing airport versus constructing a new airport on a greenfield site with 35,000 acres someplace else. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for letting me talk with you today. I feel strongly. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. If I've picked on anyone or attacked anyone, I apologize. That's not my intent today. However, I think a spade is a spade, and this has been going on for a very long time, and I think we need to come to some decisions. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Hamill, if you had a little bit of time to think about what an appropriate committee membership would be, could you give us your recommendations before, say, like Wednesday or Thursday next week?
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to do that.
All right, because the next stop for this bill is Senator Rest's committee, and Senator Rest's committee has a better handle on appropriate makeup of task forces, and I think that maybe that might be a place to bring those ideas and maybe make this membership work better. I'm glad to hear that you feel that this is probably a worthwhile endeavor to at least get the right people on there and then take another look. So if you could, prepare a statement for Senator Rest's committee, we'd all appreciate it.
Be happy to do that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
And thanks again. And hopefully you didn't take too much to heart, because I think everybody here feels that you guys do a remarkable job with what you've got, and we appreciate your efforts.
Mr. Chairman, one of the compliments that we face at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport is that we are visited by airports all over the United States and all over the world. And they come to watch and look at our operations, our wintertime snow removal programs, our noise abatement program. And while they may not necessarily agree, it's a quiet compliment to be the focus of so many airports around the world and used as a model. So thank you very much.
Yep. Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hamill, yes. I can't let you get away, can I? I mean, really.
Sorry, Senator.
It is very good to have somebody so passionate about the job in your position. And quite honestly, I do agree with you on some of the issues, because I do find it troubling. We just were working on actually mucking up the water. I tried to pass a pretty strong bill on at point of sale disclosing that your property was in an airport safety zone, and we had to soften that down to meet the realtor's needs and the builder's needs. And it's like, well, if it's really a safety issue, then that would be one of our priorities to make sure that people have to disclose they're in those safety zones. So I get a little frustrated there sometime. But one of the things that's always kind of bugged me about this deal, did we or did we not indemnify the city on that runway safety area?
Mr. Chairman, Hamill. Senator Jungbauer, yes, there was an indemnification clause, and to be absolutely accurate and precise but not draw out the conversation, I'm going to ask Tom Anderson, our general counsel, to address this issue because he, in fact, worked on this specific arrangement.
Mr. Anderson, your name for the record,
thank you,
please.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thomas Anderson, general counsel of the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, we were asked by each of the communities involved with the Joint Airport Zoning Board to indemnify them for their involvement in passing the zoning regulations that were to be adopted by each of their communities. Under the airport zoning statute, the option is either for each individual community to adopt the ordinance or for the Joint Airport Zoning Board or the Airports Commission itself to adopt the ordinance. We felt for ease of administration, it made more sense to ask each of the communities to adopt the ordinance itself, as opposed to having the zoning board or MAC do it for ease of administration. So if someone was asking for a variance, for example, they could do that by simply going to the local community as opposed to having to make a number of stops. So essentially, as a customer service to landowners who wanted to perhaps seek variances from these ordinances, they would ask, we would say they could go to each separate community, The community said, fine, we'll do that, as opposed to having the Airports Commission adopt the ordinance, but we want indemnification. Our board considered that and said, yes, we felt it was appropriate to do that. The airport was the primary entity responsible for the safe operation of the airport, essentially making many of the judgments about the safety issues involved with the airport, and felt that it was appropriate for us to do it. So that is absolutely correct. That indemnification was offered to the communities. It was accepted by them. And, in fact, it was litigated. Interstate Diesel did bring a lawsuit challenging the propriety of that, and the court said, yes, of course. Local units of government indemnify each other all the time. That's entirely appropriate in this case, and the case was dismissed.
Mm-hmm. Senator Jungbauer?
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hamill, thank you for that. So we're kind of on the hook for the deal, and, you know, maybe we'll come to the same conclusion as you, but I think I've been very consistent that, you know, I'm tired of hearing this deal here. I like this idea. You know, let's come to a conclusion. Let's put it to rest. Let's be consistent all the way around. But if we do decide that it should be the whole thing, I got no problem saying let's write the check. But we need to be consistent. So that's a very good point. It needs to be an all-or-nothing deal. We can't just enforce it in one safety zone and not – somewhere else. So again, I like the idea of putting into place, starting with the metropolitan area, and looking at it and say, you know, are we looking at all the right details? Because sometimes, again, I think that we're not looking far enough out in the future. We're not looking at what the new aircraft might do. And it's not that I distrust you, but I want to make sure that somehow we put it to rest, because I just don't want to see it here anymore.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hamill, I spoke very strongly for the safety issue, so I want to make sure you know that it wasn't personal. I have so much appreciation that we've never had, an accident at our airport, and that is my commitment, and I think you do a great job. It's just I want to make sure that that is our future.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, I clearly understood your intent and your comments.
Thank you.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hamill. I'm a little, and probably doesn't matter because I'm not going to be affected by this, but I'm just a little confused by your comments that if we don't use this 2,500-foot standard, that all these other zones will be affected. Wasn't the old zone 4,667 feet for the A zone and was changed in 2003, so how many of these safety zones across the state will be affected by this change?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, I actually don't know offhand how many airports are impacted by the change, nor have I, in reviewing the state regulation, become familiar with what happened in 2003, and maybe Tom Anderson can speak to that. My point is this, that we have followed all of the federal criteria and gone through excruciating discussion and detail on the planning of this airport and its development, including the new runway and the takeoff and arrival corridors in and out of the airport. All I'm suggesting is that if we're going to change the zoning ordinances and it's going to impact MAX system airports, I think people in the state of Minnesota deserve equitable treatment across the state as far as safety goes when it comes to airport operations. How they move and how they change and fluctuated, I can't intelligently respond to you that specific question at this point. In fact, I have not seen the document that you're referring to, and as a result, I was concerned about some of the discussion. But I can certainly get back to this committee or in future discussion, present and discuss that issue.
Senator Larson, I think that the committee sees value in this task force, and I believe that some of the players who are involved see value in the task force. It's just a matter of the makeup. This committee is obviously wants to move the ball forward. And I think that this needs to go to state and local so that the appropriate membership, and at that time, I think, Senator Ortman, you'll have an amendment. Senator Larson, you work with Senator Ortman, with Mr. Hamill, and Senator Jungbauer, and make sure that membership issue is taken care of. Did you have a comment, Senator Ortman? No. Senator Dibble.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Chair, I was just going to support Senator Ortman and I conferred, and I think it's probably wise to see what Mr. Hamill comes up with and see what percolates up in our brains as this thing moves on to to state and local. But, you know, I'll just go back. You know, I heard Senator Jungbar say, I'm tired of hearing this here. And, you know, I sense the frustration in Director Hamill's voice.
We're not moving the airport. Senator.
But, you know, I know we're not. And so,
because
you know,
you'll still hear about it.
But, you know, and you look at the map, you know, I mean, you know, not all sides of the airport are the same. You know, so you got different issues all the way around the airport. It's 3,100 acres, you know, except for the River Valley. It's pretty much built up. And so people are going to be raising issues that affect their lives and their livelihoods and their families, you know, the livability of their families and their neighborhoods. And so there'll be second guessing. As, you know, we're not cows out in a pasture like you see around. If we were cows, then life would be a lot easier. But but we're not cows. You know, we're elected representatives, and people, you know, bring their grievances to us, and we
Senator
work on
Dibble,
them and try
some
to solve
would debate.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we'd be blamed for global warming because
yeah,
isn't there flatulence?
All that methane.
We,
yeah.
But
is this the Agriculture Committee, Mr. Chair?
So this is
way.
This
Senator
is
Dibble.
What you know. This is what the airport. This is what the MAC signed up for forever. That forever. You know, there'll be a lot of folks who have a lot of opinions about what they do and how they operate because they're so close in to a whole lot of other people. And, you know, if everything were confined to that 3,100 acres, that'd be great. But they have a huge effect and impact all the way around. Even probably the ducks down in the River Valley probably have a complaint or two.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate your suggestion, the suggestion of Senator Ortman, Senator Dibble, Senator Sieben. I think nearly every member of the Transportation Committee that we could do some work on the makeup of the task force, whether it ends up, and Senator Rest brought up important points about voting members versus non-voting members. If we can all work together to get to where we need to be so that we can take a look at this, work with Mr. Hamill as well, and both of us pour tons of emotion into this and have often spirited debates, but that is, Mr. Chair, you put it the best, that's what we do here. We hammer out and meet out public policy issues that's best for Minnesota. And we may end up back to where we are as the right policy. I'm not ruling that out. I'm not ruling anything out. I just think we should take another look at it. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 1648, as amended, be recommended to pass with the understanding that it would be referred to the State and Local Government Operations Committee. But, Mr. Chair, I think because it's a late bill, it goes to the floor and is captured by the Rules Committee, and ultimately the Rules Committee, although I've spoken with Senator Pogemiller regarding this issue, will ultimately decide its fate in terms of traveling. But I think the intention would be to go to state and local. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Right. And Senator Larson, the appropriate motion would be that 1648, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to state and local. We don't need to worry about what the Rules Committee is. We don't need to worry about them.
Good, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. They'll
taking a weight off my shoulders. Thank you.
You're welcome. Is there anybody that would like to testify against the bill? Against the amendment. Please come to the table. Your name for the record, sir.
Sir, I'm Harold Van Leeuwen. I am the Vice President of the Minnesota Council of Airports. I'm also the airport manager of the Bemidji Airport. As the fourth busiest commercial airport in the state, we have interest in this amendment. And it may be hard for you to draw how this amendment affects us, but in fact, you've included the reliever airports. And if you adopt the zoning and the process and adopt actual physical zones at those, it's just a short step to imposing that upon the remaining airports in the state. In our case, that could lead us to having to buy out a Walmart, a Home Depot, a Target, some banks, a restaurant, a couple of hotels. They aren't physically in what would be the A zone, but all their parking lots are. When you say that the zoning is a safety issue, that's true, but it's actually made up of four components. When you define your safety, you do it zoning, you do it with safety, you do it with economic decisions, which in the case of Bemidji, was done many years ago when we lost 10 court cases, 17 parcels of land, and we were ordered to buy them because they were a taking if we imposed the zoning. When you take a city such as Bemidji with 50% of the property in the town non-tax revenue generating because it's state or city, and the second largest county in the state, which is Beltrami, and 65% of that county is non-tax revenue generating, zoning becomes an economic decision, especially when you see the type of stores that are in there now. Third and fourth elements of zoning are risk identification and risk mitigation. Somebody asked where that funny little zone came from that looked like a keyhole. That's the one we designed at Bemidji using the current process in place to define zoning and how it's done using those four criteria. Again, safety, economics, mitigation, and identification. If we go back and have to redefine that zoning, $14 million in work that we're doing right now to move runways will be lost. We'll have to go back and still do it. Potentially, that means closing a whole runway at Bemidji because we don't have the space or the funds to move it further. Second is that your process, what you're looking at with this amendment, is tackling a specific solution. That's not what you're really questioning. What you're questioning is the process that was in place that got you to that solution. If that's of concern, then that's what the study group ought to look at. The process of how the solution came to be. And that's defined in the ordinance. The other thing is there's a misstatement here. The model ordinance for the state is just that. It's a model. It's not a standard. It's a model put in place through statistical studying that says this is the most likely solution. It's not mandated as the only solution. We look at other things. In our case, the airport, 95% of our traffic is commercial traffic. Commercial pilots, and I can speak to this because I am one. I also grew up in the Air Force and spent 26 years, and I'm a retired colonel. And I was on the other end of air traffic control in the service. I was the guy talking to the pilot. I was the guy responsible for safety zones and air traffic control. Pilots and commercials crash on centerline within 1,000 feet of the runway. Commercial airports have a different crash category than general aviation. General aviation, and I euphemistically say, they crash with random acts of stupidity. On a pin map, you can't pick where they're going to crash. They're closer to airports, but they aren't like that. When you talk to commercial airports, we're pretty disciplined pilots. We like to hit on the center line, and we hit within 1,000 feet of that runway. Jeff Hamill mentioned the Teterboro accident. That was a takeoff accident. He stopped when he hit a building. That building could have been 1,500 feet as well as 600 feet away. He went across the highway. You can't design a zone that's going to fit every accident or protect you against everyone. You statistically model those zones to mitigate the risk and to minimize the potential injuries. That's what we have to do. And if you put this in place and you go with a specific solution, you're going to force us at the other commercial airports to go back and look at these. That includes buying out highways at brand-new airports. Wilmer's got a highway, goes through its A-zone at a brand-new airport. That's an acceptable risk today. But if you put into place what you're talking about, it won't be. We'll have to buy it. In Bemidji's case, you're talking tens of millions of dollars to clear up the zones if you use a standard answer. You have to look at the process. And if you disagree with the process, then that's what the group ought to address, not the specific answer. The process was in place. It brought it to an answer at MSP, and that's the answer that's there now. So, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lout. Further discussion? Seeing none on the Larson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Committee's adjourned.